become a bit obsessed with China around here. And actually, if you're not a bit obsessed with China, I think you're missing out on the story of the century, as it is a country that actually has the ability to compete with us economically and militarily, is hell-bent on doing so, and is run by an evil dictatorship. If that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what would.
Well, what could lead us to anything but forceful rejection of that country and that leadership? Well, trillions of dollars in trade tends to make you feel a little more ambivalent about evil. But to discuss that and many other topics, Ying Ma joins us. Ying Ma, the author of Chinese Girl in the Ghetto, contributor to Fox News, Washington Examiner, NBC.com, former columnist for the Wall Street Journal's China blog, among a number of other interesting positions. Welcome. How are you?
Good, good. Good morning to you both. Great to be back on with you.
It's been too long.
I know. My gosh. I remember last time I was here, we were in the middle of the 2016 campaign, and I was right in the middle of that working for the Ben Carson campaign and the pro-Trump super PAC. And
we're now
back in another election year.
Oh, boy.
So I was reading a little of your bio stuff yesterday, and you grew up under Mao.
I did.
And there was a phrase in there, and I don't know if you wrote it or whoever was writing about you wrote it, but, you know, on the during the burgeoning time of becoming a capitalist society. So what year did you leave China? And at that time, did it seem like it was heading the way of capitalism?
I left in the mid-80s. And so what was happening back then was the 80s was actually a great era, because that was a time when a lot...
Parachute pants, Madonna. It was a great era.
We had all that in China, too.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding. But the people of China aspired to have all that. And I think what was interesting about the 80s was that it was when China actually really got going with its economic reforms. And so there were lots of firsts. You know, the first time people got to choose where to work, where to live, you know, what to buy on the market. And those were very the very, very first beginnings with baby steps. And so it was not full blown capitalism in any way. But what was happening was that capitalism was introduced to a very repressive, very closed off society. And so, you know, for instance, did you know that for the longest time, farmers in China couldn't keep profits from, you know, from their crops? And then so profit incentives were actually introduced in the 80s. And so it was from that era that China embarked on the road of what's called reform and opening. And you know, and it's one of the reasons why China grew into the economic giant that it is today.
Well, when they allowed incentives for production, production exploded.
Indeed.
Which
indeed.
Is not surprising.
You would think that would keep a country from wanting to head back towards socialism when you got that perfectly good example of how capitalism works. But.
Well, I think they are very I think one thing that they're very fond of is that nobody in China is opposed to making money. And that goes for the Chinese Communist Party. They've now come to realize how much money can buy. It buys you influence overseas. It makes the party stronger. And, you know, the good thing about introducing capitalism in China is that a lot of the Chinese people who have this great entrepreneurial spirit, they got to know what it is like to run their own business, to actually, you know, to actually participate in the market.
Okay, well, there's the question then right there. So the Stalin and Lenin and his crew, they in Russia, they were actually communists.
Indeed.
It is now known from their own personal writings and everything. They actually believed in communism.
Indeed.
And then they were trying to carry that out. The Communist Party in China, are they actually communists?
Oh,
or are
absolutely.
They are actually
absolutely.
Communists.
They are a new and improved version of communism. And I think there is a lot of sophistication and a lot of complexity that's not often understood. And you've got all kinds of idiots running around saying China's no longer a communist country. That is absolutely not true, because I think at the core of it, communism is about control. It is about controlling the ideas of the people who live under it. It is about controlling their lives, and it is about all kinds of things. And the Communist Party has at no point decided that it wants to cede political power in any way. And so it is absolutely adamant about keeping that control. What it has done is that it has realize that if it kept on going the way that it did in the Cultural Revolution or the Great Leap Forward back in the 50s and 60s, all of its people were starving to death, and that that is no way to run a country. And so it has decided to, over the past 40 years, to introduce elements of market reform. But it is not at all a free market society, because, you know, in the middle of all those market reform elements, the state continues to maintain control of vast chunks of the economy. And so the sophistication in all this is that the Chinese government has managed to find a way to make this sort of reforms work, to generate profits, to generate wealth, to generate influence, without having to face what the former Soviet Union faced, which is an overthrow of the regime.
Well, and as a regime, to balance the openness to the free market and the global market with the political control, there has to be an enormous sophistication.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
To the control mechanisms.
Yes.
And it's almost like recognizing that Hitler's war machine sweeping across Europe was a stunning bit of military planning. I mean, as loathsome and horrific as it was, it's just undeniably impressive. The Chinese regime, you got to admire them. That's almost impossible what they're doing right now.
There is so much sophistication. And you know, I think it's important to recognize that. So even though there has been all these new forms of liberation that didn't used to exist, right? That people have more opportunities to live where they want to live, to buy what they want to buy, to say what they want to say in private. But what the regime has done is that it has continued to exert control in other ways. It's now, you know, it now censors the internet. The internet did not exist when I, you know, was growing up in China. It now has very sophisticated surveillance technology, supplied in part by Western companies that want to make a profit in China. And it is able to figure out where its citizens go, what they're doing, you know, what trains they hop on and what trains they're, so, you know, there is this social credit system in China that if you do things that the Chinese government does not like, there are all kinds of ways that it could impede upon your ability to do basic things like buy plane tickets, for instance. So it is a vastly sophisticated state in a way that I think a lot of people don't understand.
Have you ever been to one of those wet bat markets? Where the coronavirus started?
I've been to all kinds of wet markets, and I've eaten all kinds of things that you probably don't want
ever
to know
sampled
about.
The delicious pangolin that they think is at the center of it?
That I have not. I can, however, you know, tell you all kinds of ways that people kill animals in their own homes in order to eat them. And so during the days when I used to grow up, people actually ate their pets in China.
That was not an eye-opening experience at all.
Not at all. And I had, you know, even though I was in the middle of the third largest city in China, I had chickens in my kitchen that we would grab and kill if we wanted a meal from time to time. That's pretty common as well. It's no longer the case now, but wet markets are quite common. They're still enjoyed by the Chinese people. And it's, you know, but I hear that, you know, the government wants to get rid of them because they're now just a hotbed for diseases.
Yeah. So we were emailing yesterday and you told me this story about this MMA fighter.
Yes.
And
yes.
A journalist and the coronavirus. We're going to take a little break, but we got to hear this story. This is what the Chinese Communist Party is capable of doing. It features the wet bat market and MMA fighting.
It's just a wet market. It's not wet bats. Everything's wet.
All the elements of a story that you need to keep you to stay tuned to the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
If you get a chance to pick up a copy of Chinese Girl in the Ghetto by Ying Ma, you should absolutely read it for a number of different reasons. It's super interesting about China. It's super interesting about the United States as seen through the eyes of an immigrant and race relations and all sorts of great stuff. But Ying Ma joins us to talk about China and all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah, this story, because we were emailing yesterday, this kind of encompasses a couple of things that are in the news. Coronavirus, the communist government, what Xi's government's willing to do. Tell the story.
Well, so, and it encompasses MMA, which I know is a big deal for lots of people across this country. So let me start with the coronavirus. I mean, as we all know, it's really become such a big problem. There are 75,000 cases in China that we know of.
Are the numbers coming out of China at all reliable?
You know, the answer is we can't possibly just believe what they tell us.
Okay.
But even if we don't, 75,000 is a lot.
Right.
I mean,
fair
already
enough. Okay.
That's what they're admitting to. And then the death toll is over 200, right? And so what there are a couple of citizen journalists that have gone to the epicenter of the virus and have tried to done sort of YouTube videos and others to try to get the word out, figure out what's going on. And they've been disappeared by the authorities.
Oh boy.
They've been disappeared.
Yes, that's the word that, and speaking of China being a communist country, this is a word that's commonly used in the former Soviet Union, as well as other countries behind the Iron Curtain in the old days. That still happens in China. So don't anybody sort of get into the temptation of thinking that communism doesn't continue to exist in China.
And are they likely in a prison camp or dead?
We don't know, because when people were disappeared, we have no idea where they are and what was their offense. They actually risked their lives to go to these hospitals where all these people are dying with this coronavirus that we don't know very much about. And they reported all kinds of things that other people, including journalists from the New York Times, had no idea of, which is one, that there is a shortage of hospital beds. Two, there is a shortage of test kits. And so at the epicenter of the city where this virus started, you know, it becomes a problem, right? When you see corpses lying around in hospitals and they're not being cleared quickly enough, or that within a day, you know, from at a major hospital, you see the number of corpses go from 2 to 8 in a short amount of time. That's the kind of reporting that some of these journalists have done. And what did the authorities do? Well, they rounded them up. And now here's where the MMA guy gets involved. You know, this is actually a fascinating story with all these different angles. And for those of you who do any kind of martial arts, MMA is different, I think. And let me make a side tangent here. A lot of people have complained that even though Chinese martial arts has this distinguished history, you know, you've got all these people.
I've seen Kung Fu Panda.
There you go, right?
Oh,
but
boy.
one of the biggest critiques of traditional Chinese martial arts is that, is it practical? Can you fight? If a Chinese martial artist, all these people with their fancy moves, get into the octagon, can you actually fight? And so there is this Chinese MMA fighter in China who have taken it upon himself to expose the frauds of Chinese martial arts, which is to say that
his words are yours. Do you think it's a fraud, or it's his words?
He feels that many of these esteemed masters in China can't fight, and he's challenged to real fights. And this is a guy, his name is Xu Xiaodong, and this is a guy who became famous because a couple of years ago he knocked out a Tai Chi master in 20 seconds. And since then, he's gone on to challenge other masters. And so he's cocky, he's arrogant, he's obnoxious and outright disrespectful. But he happens to be friends with one of the citizen journalists who was disappeared. And this MMA fighter is one of the few people who actually has put his face on a video to say to the world that this person, you know, this friend of mine is doing this. He was trying to tell the truth about the coronavirus, and the government rounded him up. And the government, you know, used the excuse that this man was infected with the virus and hence he was quarantined. And
right.
The MMA fighter says that's complete BS. And so
he might be famous enough that they can't disappear him. That's what he has going for him.
Well, his whole point was, I'm going to put this all out there and they're going to come after me, but this is my insurance policy. I don't know how well that's,
maybe he could fight Xi. Would Xi fight him?
Xi would just, I think Xi has enough people with guns
beat the honey out of Winnie the Pooh, huh? Hey, listen, as long as we're kind of on the topic, I've heard it said that this is fomenting serious, possibly dangerous to the regime, levels of unrest. Will the steam be let off and things go back to normal, or do you think this has the potential to drive real change?
I would say it's fomenting serious discontent. Unrest, I don't think it's gotten to the level of unrest yet. When you're talking about unrest, I'm thinking about mass protests, rallies. That's
what we saw in Hong Kong.
Right, right. And I'm glad you brought up Hong Kong, because I think, and this MMA fighter, when the Hong Kong protests were at their height, he actually went out there and publicly supported the protesters in Hong Kong, which is a very rare feat as well. Wow. You don't see Jackie Chan doing that. Jackie Chan is running around condemning the protesters.
Mm.
And so I think it sometimes takes people who are a little bit crazy and perhaps kind of obnoxious in order to challenge the status quo, to have the courage to actually say to this powerful government, to give the government the middle finger. Now, when it comes to unrest and discontent in China, you are absolutely right that this epidemic has stirred up all kinds of unrest. People have been calling for freedom of speech, because if they don't have freedom of speech, people die. The government has been covering up the extent of the illness. And so there's a lot of that. But I think what it reminds us of is that people who foment unrest or who challenge the government, they don't just do it as sort of a concept. It helps a lot more when their lives are at stake.
It's a motivator.
And so I think for a lot of people in China, I don't think many people in China were not firmly behind the protesters in Hong Kong for a number of reasons. But I think with something like this, where their lives are at stake, it's stirred up all kinds of hostility toward the regime and all kinds of people asking the regime to actually, make reforms.
We are just about out of time with Ying Ma, author of Chinese Girl in the Ghetto, contributor to FoxNews.com, Washington Examiner, NBC News.
Where do you want people to find you? Your website, your Twitter, your whatever?
So on Twitter, I am at GZTO Ghetto, GZ2 Ghetto. And my website is yingma.org. That is YINGMA.org.
We'll have the links at armstrongandgetty.com so people can find them really
easily.
And when
I have a question about a story in the news about China or a book or whatever, she's the one that I always email or text or whatever and say, what do you think about this?
You realize he only orders sweet and sour pork, right? Have you heard that? It's the only Chinese food he ever orders.
No, but I thought when I was on with you guys, when my book first came out, we agreed that I would take Jack to a Chinese restaurant, an authentic Chinese restaurant.
Do they have sweet and sour pork?
Oh, boy. All right. Now we are out of time. This is ridiculous. This is terrible. But this is the ugly American right here.
But I can try the real authentic. Or take me to a wet bat market. I want to check one of those out.
Maybe when the coronavirus is over.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
China Grove, really, Michael?
Texters responding to our guest we just had on, Ying Ma, talking about China. Love this woman. Great interview. Ying Ma was fantastic. She's delightful, engaging, and informative. You should have her on all the time, yeah?
Anytime we're talking China. We love her.
Yeah. Greater interaction with Ying Ma with an infectious laugh. Really enjoyed the restaurant talk. Yeah, well, we continued the restaurant talk with her a little bit. More on that in a second. Oh, and maybe they misspoke. Maybe he was a chai tea master and not a tai chi master.
I will brew this. Ow! Gee, what the hell? Why'd you hit me?
I was unaware of this story, but haven't we all seen the ancient tradition of some sort of martial arts and thought, could you actually fight anybody with that?
I think I could just run up and tackle you.
So this martial arts guy said, that's all a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
This guy with a 50th degree black belt who studied the ancient whatever, and he beat the guy up in 20 seconds.
That was kind of the early premise of the UFC, was to figure out which one of these is the best. Could the boxing guy beat the karate guy? Could he beat the wrestling guy?
Right.
And then the actual answer was, well, if the person who knows the most about the most things is usually the one who ends up winning. Right.
How often is it the biggest, strongest, fastest guy, though?
Early on, it wasn't. I won't go too deep into this, but there's a Brazilian family known as the Gracies who started jiu-jitsu, and they were decimating people much larger than their size.
Really? Yeah. Interesting.
They just had such a knowledge advantage. People didn't know how to defend their chokes and their arm holds.
It's like trying to fight a boa.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so during, after the interview ended and during the commercial break, we were discussing the wet markets, or wet bat markets, as Jack likes to call them. And very quickly, I got to share this email from Laura. I've been so disappointed all week since I thought Jack was saying wetbacks on the air.
No, wet bat.
Bats with a T.
Originally, when the story broke about the coronavirus, they mentioned that they had bats just swimming in like buckets of goo. These wet markets.
Well, she told her husband she was going to have to stop listening. And every time you said it, she thought, oh, my God, you're a racist pig using ethnic slurs. I'm so relieved. Love your show. I'll try to pay more attention.
Well, it might be an ethnic slur against China. I don't know. But it's a wet bat market.
Well, it's a wet market. Right.
Right. I like to emphasize the bats.
But I like the pangolin, which is that wacky scaled mammal that they think the disease may have come from. But the discussion went on.
So our guest, who grew up in China, said these wet markets are really a lot of fun. There's a lot going on there, a lot of animals and all that different sort of stuff, including cats and dogs, which I find horrific. Just horrific.
If you were starving, you might find it less horrific.
I find the dogs thing horrific. The way cats are prehistoric beasts. They don't care. They like to be eaten.
I'm not even that bothered by eating the dogs, because we put down gazillions of dogs in the United States, and there's no reason you don't use their meat for something particularly. Yeah. But I know the way they treat these animals, that's what makes it so awful. And they're not the same as a cow. They're just not. Their ability for companionship and feelings is different than a cow.
Well, they have a need for it. Well, and she was talking about families actually eat their pets. I would submit to you, if you plan to at any point in the future eat an animal, it's not your pet. It's just livestock.
Not in the traditional American sense.
Right.
Yeah, it's livestock.
Yeah.
And so there's a dish, a popular dish. What'd she say it was called?
Dragon, Phoenix, and Tiger.
Uh-huh.
And which, of course, nobody has dragon meat, nor phoenix, and tigers are tough to come by. So it's actually snake, chicken, and cat.
House cat.
Yeah, just regular cat.
And she said,
she said it's delicious.
She said we could talk about this, but I don't want people hating on her, because I know how people are about pets.
Well,
but
it's not that she did this nor enjoyed it. It's just what's done in China.
It's just a reality of... Do you know how you kill a cat? No.
Sounds like the punch is, set up to a joke. It's not.
It's not that Netflix special that's so popular right now. But she knows, because people regularly did it in her hood growing up. That's what people would do. And we don't need to go into details on that, I suppose, but nobody wants to hear that.
But it's grim, but...
Yeah.
It's just a different culture. And, I've talked about this, the fabulous book on killing that talks about how we have so separated ourselves from death in the United States. We're simultaneously fascinated by it, but it's far away from us. Grandpa doesn't pass away at home anymore, and we don't, help the undertaker with the body or anything like that. We just keep it in our food. We assume, the chicken committed suicide that's there in the grocery store? Died of old age? No, we just don't even think about it.
And she grew up where you would kill the neighbor cat and eat it that night.
You'd be better off killing your own. Kill the neighbor's cat.
You're less attached to that one.
Getting together.
Do you kill each other's cats?
I was just picturing you getting together.
Okay. I thought you were like going into their yard
and
killing
the cat and having dinner.
Not snatching their cat.
And I know some of you are just like crying thinking about this, but that's the different reality she grew up with than what we've grown up with. How about her story of this MMA fighter who has a friend who's a doctor trying to raise awareness on coronavirus, disappears.
That's a courageous man.
And the government says, I got the coronavirus under quarantine. No,
we're taking care of him. Yeah, I'll bet you are.
Maybe dead, maybe in a prison for a work camp forever, which might as well be dead.
He's getting a little re-education. It's like they say about those prison camps where the millions of Uyghurs are, that we're teaching them job skills. Job skill number one, keep your mouth shut, in communist China.
That is something.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, travel broadens the mind, they say. So I'm going to go over to China and get me some cat as soon as the whole coronavirus is over.
She said that dragon phoenix
tiger soup.
Tiger soup. She said it's delicious.
Oh, I'll bet.
I don't know what percentage of what. I don't want to eat snake, cat. I'll eat a chicken.
They say snake tastes like chicken, though, right?
No,
it's the joke.
I don't care.
It's chicken soup.
Then why don't
for
I eat
for the soul,
how
maybe.
About, how about I eat chicken then if it tastes like chicken?
You're just gonna order Phoenix? No, come on.
Yeah. But they don't the even Phoenix. Have that. Go back to the kitchen. Another special order from an American.
I think I'm pretty sure I've asked her this before, and I don't remember the answer. Do they even have sweet and sour pork in China?
I don't think that. Well, there's probably some form of it. It would be unrecognizable right. to your palate.
Right.
Yeah. I think if you were to take a Chinese person and stick them in a Panda Express, they would say, "What the hell is this stuff?"
That's what I got to do next time she's around. We got to go to Panda Express,
right,
and have her review the food because she's probably never eaten there.
You know, oh, that would be hilarious. You know what? Well, it's like
a good YouTube video.
One of the things I'm envious that you've done is you traveled Mexico back when it was less dangerous than it is now, but via your motorcycle, small towns, and ate and drank amongst the people and the rest of it. Although the times I've been in Mexico, traveling with my friend Drew, who speaks fluent Spanish, we did a fair amount of that sort of thing. But did you run into any gigantic one-pound burritos that the local Mexican people are eating?
No.
How
about a taco made out of a Dorito shell?
Not so much. Yeah, third world is not as into stunt food as we are here in the United Fat States of America.
El Gordo wants a one-pound burrito.
Yes. Oh, boy. Well, that's always interesting.
Yeah.
Great to talk to Ying Ma.
China is a freaking scary country. When are we going to wake up to that? Some people have, but not enough have. Mayor Bloomberg hasn't. It should be disqualifying him the other night pretending China's not part of the climate change problem.
Oh, yeah.
Because he does business there. That should be disqualifying on its own.
It will. He will get murdered for that if he gains any traction. He is way sweet on the Communist Party of China because they make him so much money. And we can't have that. Please, that horse poo about Trump being a Russian agent. Even if he were, Russia is an undersized economy, a hollowed out military. Just they're geographically enormous, but they're mostly just a pain in the ass. China, on the other hand, is an immense superpower bent on world domination and has the means to at least get partway there. And the idea that you got a guy who is openly, nakedly soft on the Chinese communists, forget it.
Donald Trump, don't trust China.
Forget it. I will go full on activist. I will not, you know, I'm not going to set myself on fire on the Capitol steps or anything. But, man, I go hardcore to make sure old Bloomberg does not become president. Give it to virtually any one of those yahoos before you give it to him.
Snake is a lot chewier than chicken, several texters have pointed out.
That's why you got to slow cook it. Oh, yeah.
You knew it was a snake when you picked it up with your fork. You did ask her in the past. Our listeners would remember this.
I know. You people are amazing.
You remember everything.
Yeah.
You did ask her about sweet and sour pork, and she said, no, they don't have that.
Still, though, maybe they've added it since.
Yeah, and maybe that's their loss. Huh?
Yeah, maybe I introduce it to China, and Jack's Hut of sweet and sour pork becomes a huge sensation. There's one in every village.
They'll just order pork, Jack style, in China for the next 150 years.
Yeah. I'll be like a king there.
Just like one, right.
Armstrong and Getty.
Because we had a fabulous guest earlier this hour, forgot to do Kyle Clips of the Week, which is always good, and it was a heck of a week.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. As you'll be reminded now as we take a fond look back at the week that was with Kyle.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
Well, Bloomberg must be the front runner because liberals are calling him a racist. Keep booing. That's how you lost the last election.
There's a hole in the sky where the tree once was. Somebody's making money.
I could teach anybody, even people in this room, so no offense intended, to be a farmer.
You set your mind to go. Believe in yourself. Pursue with a passion. You can accomplish anything.
Nobody just says the obvious. Bernie, you're full of it. None of this is going to get passed. You're going to be a miserable president, frustrated from the first day.
A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
What a wonderful country we have. The best-known socialist in the country happens to be a millionaire with three houses. What'd I miss here?
Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another.
Mayor Bloomberg, that he was the first time up on the stage, on a debate stage with this group, how would he respond? They tore the skin off him yesterday, last night in Las Vegas.
Please, please keep the birds away from those windmills, please. Tell those beautiful bald eagles, don't know a bald eagle.
You know, the thing I like best about the Bloomberg line is how New York it is.
Leading socialist in the country. He's got a millionaire with three houses. What am I missing here?
Hey, come on.
Hey, what are you trying
Forget
to pull
about
here?
It.
Nevada caucuses begin at noon West Coast, 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. So results will be coming in the late afternoon, early evening, certainly.
Heavy turnout in the early caucus process, Jack.
Do we have another Iowa? Back to you, Jack.
You might. Yeah. In Nevada, a last-minute scramble to make voting technology work, says the Washington Post, using the same. They were planning to use the same software that Iowa had, and they got new iPads and cobbled together some new stuff with Google software, and it's sort of untried, and hopefully they can make it happen.
Doesn't go well. Head of the Nevada DNC. Shallow hole in the desert.
Oh, you got Joe Pesci. Head in the vice. Put their head
ow,
in the vice.
Ow, hey, that hurts.
Charlie M? You made me pop out your eye for Charlie M?
All right, now. Take it easy.
Oh, wow. That was a bit much.
Oh, wow. It will help that it's not going to be close, right? Because in Iowa, it ended up being separated by less than one percentage point, and you got to really get down to the nitty-gritty. The fact that Bernie has like a 15-point lead in Nevada should make it a little easier to call.
What polls?
All of them.
Okay.
So he doesn't have the union backing PG&E in California on his side, even though Bernie's going to win the state of California. He does not have that, whatever that union is in Nevada they keep talking about.
Yeah, the biggest, culinary workers.
The most powerful union in Nevada. Mm-hmm. And Chris Matthews made the point the other day. How is he the candidate of the working man when all the unions don't want to back him?
Well, because they
That's
work
a healthcare
so,
thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. The unions busted their butts to get good healthcare for their workers. Now Bernie wants to take it away and substitute government healthcare. And, well, the unions, for selfish reasons, you know, they get the credit for getting that for their workers, and they need to justify their own existence. But also, they know that'll be crappier for our people. So they're actually looking out for their members. So in the time we have left, we were talking earlier about a couple of things that are worth recapping just briefly, and I'm bringing this up again because I just saw it again, but the whole intelligence community reveals that the Russians favor Trump and Trump goes crazy and fires his DNI. There are now all sorts of people from Matt Taibbi to Jake Tapper coming out and saying that is the worst sort of journalism. I'm talking to people who are saying it's not true.
Notorious Trump supporters, Matt Taibbi and Jake Tapper.
Yeah,
sure.
I know it. Well, right. Oh, how the formerly great media giants have turned into clickbait-seeking crack whores.
You can excuse
the metaphor.
MSNBC, for instance, going crazy all day long in this story, because that's what they do, and it's cable news. And
it's newsotainment.
It's newsotainment.
Yeah.
You can't excuse the New York Times. You really can't.
No.
That's just weak.
Well, it's desperation. I mean, people do desperate things when they're desperate.
How about you hang on for a day and nail it down the way Matt Taibbi did and Jake Tapper did with a few more phone calls and decide whether you want to run that on your front page?
You'd have missed out on hundreds of thousands of clicks if you did that. Period. End of analysis.
Man, that's some bad short-term thinking.
Yep.
There's a hole in the show, and you know it's time to go. It's time for final thoughts. On your feet!
What?
The lady does say, on your feet!
Oh, she
at
does.
At the city council meeting, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Funny.
On your feet. Here's your host, Joe Getty.
Hey, let's get a final thought from everybody on the crew. He presses the buttons. He keeps us on the air. What would we do without him? Michelangelo, final thought.
Well, I heard the news that Costco is going to make sure you have a membership if you eat at the food court. I'm the master of disguise. You'll never catch me.
Shoot me. Positive Sean, our producer, final thought?
Thrilled, absolutely thrilled that Better Call Saul is returning this weekend. I can't wait to see how this this whole story plays out.
Yes. Jack, a final thought for us?
Yeah, those are my two favorite stories of the day. Costco is no longer going to let people sneak into the food court. And the Kia, is that the right car? I should make sure I get it right. They got some of them that are catching on fire, even if they're off. So they're saying, don't park it in your garage or near a building. Now that's a recall.
Well, it'll save you painting the flames on the side like they used to do in the 50s if your car's actually on fire. 200,000 SUVs and vans recalled for electrical problems that cause fires.
Ah, it's going to catch on fire and sit in your garage.
Now you're nitpicking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my final thought. By the way, something. It's actually a story we talked about. There's a footnote in the infamous Ninth Circuit decision to disallow enforcing camping regulations when bums are sleeping in your park that the cities are starting to look at thinking, wait a minute, we can exploit this and start clearing out the bums again. It says you can do it to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. Well, that's a pretty big loophole. Let's see if cities start doing it. Clear away the junkies!
Armstrong and Getty wrapping up another grueling four-hour workday.
So many people to thank, so little time. Go to armstrongandgetty.com. All the clicks we talked about, information on Ying Ma, our podcast, all the podcasts. You can download them. You can email us, mailbag at armstrongandgetty.com.
Going to be a lot going on next week. I hope you can join us. See you then. God bless America.
Well, kids, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Sideshow Mel, Corporal Punishment, Gina Ballerina, and from Not Planning, Miss Donna Mills. Oh, she was a sport. We've had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fun. Now the time has come to go. If this still clown was found dead in his bed tomorrow, I'd be in heaven still doing this show. See you some other time!
Armstrong and Getty.